Hey, welcome to the Bible Savvy Podcast, a weekly conversation on how to understand, enjoy, and apply God's Word. I'm your host, Nikki Lucas, and I'm joined by Executive Pastor Eric Ferris and Teaching Pastor Clayton Keenan. We're about to jump into another passage from the Bible Savvy Reading Plan, but before we do, guys, I've got a question. Would you rather eat only sweet foods, savory foods, or salty foods for the rest of your life?
All right, I need to clarify something.
Of course you do.
So if it's only salty foods, for instance, if it's a salty food, but it also happens to be sweet, like a chocolate-covered pretzel, I can say that's a salty food, but it also happens to be a sweet food. Do I get to sneak anything in?
I have no idea.
Because the tricky part is many things to eat have both of these, you know, multiple flavors,
true.
Right?
That's very true.
So then if it's like only sweet, and it's like, well, so I basically can only have candy, but if it, you know, has nuts in it, it starts to get a little savory or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think the answer for health and sustainability is probably savory. Because I think if I only had like chips. And candy or whatever, that would not be sustainable.
Right. Really?
But I think...
My doctor has told me otherwise.
What my inner child says is, I want sweet food.
You want sweets?
Yeah.
I just hit a happy new year. I'm scrolling through the sound effects panel, everyone.
Ferris, what's your answer?
My answer is savory. But I can't. My love for cured meats has gotten me into some cholesterol problems.
Oh, really?
And my doctor has some things to say. But if you just ate all sweets,
no, that's
I mean, it's going to go so, bad
blood
for you
sugar.
Either way.
Okay, so our choices are diabetes, high blood pressure, or high cholesterol.
Yeah, that's
I guess
which one are you going to pick?
Pretty much.
So the question could be reframed as, how do you want to die?
Oh gosh!
Yeah. Oh gosh!
Wow!
Death by
you just took a food question because Nikki loves her food questions and turned it into a death question.
I'm not the one that asked the question. I'm simply pointing out that none of these options are good.
I just don't know if you can have cured meats because they're salty. Like that's where the question about the chocolate covered pretzel comes in, because if you're like, I want this meat. It's salty, but if I could only have it savory, it's like, well, do I just have to have like unseasoned chicken? You know what I mean? Like, is that all I get? Like, I can't have soup. It's savory, but it's also salty.
Unseasoned chicken isn't any of those. Well, it's not sweet. It's not savory.
Well, it's savory. Isn't that what that is?
I mean, it doesn't fall into the sweet or salty food.
It's not sour or bitter.
So that's how we're defining the categories. If it's not one of the other two, it's the third.
I guess so.
Savory is the umami, right?
Like, what's a piece of celery?
Yeah, like it's right back here.
Yeah, you can't see.
Right back in the jaws.
So
hold on, I want to test this premise. So celery, it's not sweet. It's not salty. You're telling me celery is savory by definition?
No, that's not true.
Oh, gosh. It's bitter. It's bitter.
Here's what I want to say. For the first time in over 3 years of recording these podcasts, I think we have finally stumbled upon an unanswerable question, or a completely invalid question.
Because
all of the other questions have been really valid.
Nikki, did you have an inclination?
I was going to go with savory foods. I like meat. I like big food. I don't want to...
Big food. Not pepperoni. Uh-uh. Pork chops.
No, pork chops, steak, burgers. I thought chicken too, you know, with like a bunch of like Cajun seasoning on it, you know? I might look small, but I can put it down. Okay? I can put it down.
That's a T-shirt. We haven't made a podcast T-shirt
been
in a while. I may be small, but I can put it down.
All right, Eric, you've got some stuff to tell some of our listeners about.
I do. I actually have stuff to tell all of our listeners about.
You have some stuff to tell.
It's
all
called
the listeners
Easter.
Yes.
The incarnation and the resurrection of Jesus are the two high points of the Christian year. Mm. We are coming up on celebrating the resurrection, and I want everyone out there to not think about Easter as one day. I want you to think about it as an entire week called Holy Week. So at Christ Community Church, there are three big events happening during Holy Week, and if you would participate in all three, I think you will have a great week. The first one is called Stations of the Cross. The second one is our Good Friday worship and communion services. And then the third one is the Easter services, which celebrate the resurrection. If you do the 1-2-3 punch. I think it will be amazing for you and your family. So go to the website, get all the information, check it out, and make your plan.
There you go. All right, Clayton, what passage are we looking at today?
All right, we are in Ezekiel chapter 27. Let me give you some context here. The first half of Ezekiel is all about judgment. So it's God saying, here's what's wrong and what I'm going to do as a consequence. The second half of Ezekiel turns towards hope, saying, after the judgment, is there a future for Israel? What does it look like? And the hope begins in a weird place, because it starts with God saying, here's what I'm going to do with all the other nations around you. Because basically, the judgment that God brought in on Israel was the nations coming in and taking over them. So Babylon comes in, and there are other neighboring nations around them that have mistreated Israel and have been a part of this sort of thing. And so for Israel to have restoration, for Israel to have something in the future in their land and that sort of thing, the nations around them have to be dealt with. So God starts offering hope by saying, here's what I'm going to do with all of the neighboring countries who have threatened you. And there is one in particular that God spends three chapters on, chapter 26, 27, and 28, on the people of Tyre. Now, if you open up your study Bible to the maps in the back, you can find Tyre. It's kind of on the northern coast, just north of Israel. And the fact that they're on the coast is kind of important. You're going to see this in the passage. They were a seafaring group of people. So maybe you've heard of the Phoenicians. That's the group of people we're talking about. And they were an economic powerhouse because of this. So they were traders all around the Mediterranean Sea, and they would travel and they would get luxuries and goods that came from different places, and they would bring them back and trade them all over the place. They were also known for being one of the only places that was a source of purple dye. So if you've ever, like, you know, kings and queens, like, they're dressed in purple in ancient times. The reason for that is it was very, very rare, and it only came from Tyre. That's where they made it. They had snails that lived there that you can make this dye. So they got rich selling these kind of luxury fabrics and dyes and then trading with other people and bringing it back and kind of, you know, being kind of an economic broker with all of these things. So you're going to pick this up as we read that they were pretty influential. And I'll give you a warning here. There are a lot of place names in this passage. If you want to do the extra work and go look those up on a map in your study Bible, it may be worth it. But there's a lot of them here. So I'll just give you a warning on that. So Eric, we're going to be in 27. We're going to read the first four verses, and then we're going to read verses 12 through 36.
Okay, and I have one thing to tell everybody before I start reading this. There are a lot of towns and cities named in this passage, and a lot of them are incredibly difficult to pronounce. And so when I get to the towns or cities that are incredibly difficult to pronounce, I am going to substitute them with towns or cities from the state of Ohio. So don't try to find those on your NIV Bible study maps. All right, here we go. The word of the Lord came to me, a son of man, take up a lament concerning Tyre. Say to Tyre, situated at the gateway to the sea, merchant of peoples on many coasts, this is what the sovereign Lord says. You say, Tyre, I am perfect in beauty. Your domain was on the high seas, your builders brought your beauty to perfection. Tarshish did business with you because of your great wealth of goods. They exchanged silver, iron, tin, and lead for your merchandise. Greece, Cleveland, and Akron did business with you. They traded human beings and articles of bronze for your wares. Men of Sandusky exchanged chariot horses, cavalry horses, and mules for your merchandise. The men of Rhodes traded with you, and many coastlands were your customers. They paid you with ivory tusks and ebony. Aram did business with you because of your many products. They exchanged turquoise, purple fabric, embroidered work, fine linen, coral, and rubies for your merchandise. Judah and Israel traded with you. They exchanged wheat from Cincinnati and confections, honey, olive oil, and balm for your wares. Damascus did business with you because of your many products and great wealth of goods. They offered wine from Helbon, wood from Columbus, and casks of wine from Izal in exchange for your wares, wrought iron, cassia, and calamus. Dedan traded in subtle blankets with you. Arabia and all the princes of Kedar were your customers. They did business with you in lambs, rams, and goats. The merchants of Sheba and Ramah traded with you for your merchandise. They exchanged the finest of all kinds of spices and precious stones and gold. Toledo, Youngstown, Zanesville, Dayton, Canton traded with you. In your marketplace, they traded with you beautiful garments, blue fabric, embroidered work, and multicolored rugs with cords twisted and tightly knotted. The ships of Tarshish serve as carriers for your wares. You are filled with heavy cargo as you sail the sea. Your oarsmen take you out to the high seas, but the east wind will break you to pieces far out at sea. Your wealth, merchandise and wares, your mariners, sailors and shipwrights, your merchants and all your soldiers, and everyone else on board will sink into the heart of the sea on the day of your shipwreck. The shorelands will quake when your sailors cry out. All who handle the oars will abandon their ships. The mariners and all the sailors will stand on the shore. They will raise their voice and cry bitterly over you. They will sprinkle dust on their heads and roll in ashes. They will shave their heads because of you and will put on sackcloth. They will weep over you with anguish of soul and with bitter mourning. As they wail and mourn over you, they will take up a lament concerning you. Who was ever silenced like Tyre, surrounded by the sea? When your merchandise went out to the seas, you satisfied many nations. With your great wealth and your wares, you enriched the kings of the earth. Now you are shattered by the sea in the depths of the waters. Your wares and all your company have gone down with you. All who live in the coastlands are appalled at you. Their kings shudder with horror, and their faces are distorted with fear. The merchants among the nations scoff at you. You have come to a horrible end and will be no more.
All right, let's go on to the O and comma, which is observations. And I'll kick it off by saying that list of cities reminded me of the movie Tommy Boy, because they go around to all of the little cities of Ohio in that one. So like Sandusky, that's immediately what I think of. All right, so what do you guys see in this passage?
Well, we already made this observation, but it said merchants of peoples on many coasts. Like people from all over the world are coming to Tyre, and they're trading and getting goods and getting rid of stuff. And it's a lot of rich people. Just, I mean, they're accumulating massive amounts of wealth. It's insane.
Yeah, I think when you see a long list in the Bible, sometimes it's easy to get overwhelmed thinking, I've got to figure out all the details. But sometimes something that is a long stretch of things where it's like, wow, there's just a lot of cities, a lot of different products and whatever. What really is going on is the writer is trying to overwhelm you with one big thing. And so taking the overall impression sometimes is the first step to starting to figure out the details. Is you can say, all right, I'm looking at how does this make me feel overall, or what kind of thing just comes up over and over again. And what you just said, like there's a whole lot of rich people, is one of those things that this list does to you, even if you don't know all the details.
And I think also like with rich people, it's like powerful people too, you know, which I guess sometimes like back then they were seen as one of the same, you know?
Yeah, I think there was a phrase that said, you enrich the kings of the earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so admittedly, while I was reading that, my brain was occupied with both the text and substituting in towns from Ohio. So I may have missed this, but in this text, does it say what that city did that brought on the downfall?
No, it does not. Not in this part. There are things in some of the other chapters around it that allude to it, but a lot of it has to do with their pride and the arrogance and kind of the untouchability they felt like they had.
So my overall impression, like what struck me, was essentially this phrase, my, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, there is definitely a sense of like you look at verse 3, it says, Tyre says, I am perfect in beauty. And then it says, your builders brought your beauty to perfection. There's this sense of, it says perfect, it says beauty a couple of times. Like you would look at Tyre and say, that's as good as it gets. Mm. Like that's amazing. And then by the end, people are weeping and wailing. You know what I mean? They're ripping their clothes. They're mourning over them. There's a huge reversal in fate here.
Yeah, the writer just keeps stacking all of these things, right? And then in 26, he goes, but the east wind will break you to pieces far out to sea. So all the beauty, all their perfection is all trashed at that point.
I think there's an irony in the fact that the sea made them, and then the sea will destroy them.
Oh, yeah.
That the very thing that made them rich is also the thing that will leave them, you know, at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, I found the word picture of the merchant ship to be very interesting. And of course, word pictures are scattered all throughout Ezekiel. Interesting that a merchant ship is the symbol or the word picture for the city's destruction, since that entire city was built on being really great at trade. And so if you think about a merchant ship sailing around and the trading of the goods and the thing that they thought made them beautiful and perfect becomes the word picture of their destruction.
I started to dig into the specifics, you know, once you kind of get the big picture of things. And I started to look at the kinds of products that were there. And so I just kind of listed them, like, as we were reading through, I, like, wrote on the side, you know, on my paper here that, you know, they exchanged, like, metal and there's some, like, raw materials. But a lot of it was things that were, like, luxury goods. You know, there's, like, fine linen and embroidered work. There were kind of jewels and rubies and gold and some of those things. Casks of wine. There were saddle blankets. There were, you know, different spices of various kinds. And you're getting this picture of what kind of, like, ancient wealth and luxury looks like with this. And then I actually had this moment where I was like, dude, there are some like lifestyle magazines that basically include all of these things. You know what I mean? Like Maybe not the goats or whatever, the lambs and rams, but like some people have those in their backyard. But there was something about it that you look at it and you say, oh, that's a interesting kind of distant cultural thing. And then it kind of hits closer to home. There are things in our society that we say, you know what the good life looks like? Something somewhat similar to what they thought the good life looked like.
Well, sorry, go ahead, Aaron.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, like, thinking about, like, the good life, right? You've got chariot horses, cavalry horses, mules, like cars, trucks, like, you know what I mean? Like, think about that. But what the really sad part about it here, too, is that it says that they traded human beings.
Yeah.
So there's slavery going on here as well.
Yeah, there are some things slipped in there that have it's not just greed, which like is one layer of sin that you might be picking up here, but there's some injustice going on in there too. Yeah. Even when you mention the horses, like chariot horses and cavalry mules. So we live in an area where people ride and they do that as a recreational thing. Most people in the ancient world didn't have animals for recreational purposes. They either used them as livestock, like for their land. But a horse in particular was a war machine.
War, yeah.
So if you had a chariot, that's like saying, I sold you a tank. So they're arms dealers. Mm-hmm. And so there are some things when you're saying, wait a minute. Babylon just invaded Israel and devastated them. Where did they get the weapons? Where did they get the horses? Where did they get the chariots? Well, maybe they had some of their own, but there obviously was a trade in the countries around to make sure that they were ready for war. And guess what? That affected God's people, and that affected people that they conquered, and so on. So there is like a dark side to what's going on here.
Am I remembering correctly? Was it Tyre where they got the lumber from for the building of the temple? Weren't they floating lumber down the Mediterranean Sea coast?
Yeah. To build the trees of Lebanon, which are up there in the north, the people who were kind of had the ships that were bringing it down would be people from Tyre. Yeah. But it's also the place where things like Baal worship came from too. So there's like a lot of things drifting down from the north into Israel that did not end up being good for them, although there were some things that were good for them, you know?
Okay, an observation for me comes from verse 36. The merchants among the nations scoff at you. You have come to a horrible end and will be no more. That is final. A final judgment. In fact, that judgment does happen. Tyre is essentially wiped off the map for a while. And today, present day, you can find Tyre in the country of Lebanon, but you will not find the descendants of these people, nor will you find anywhere close to the level of extravagance that's described in this text.
It's interesting. It reminds me of Jesus in the Gospels. When he's talking to some people who are being very resistant to him, and he's trying to say, the consequences are huge for you. The way he says it is, he says, you know, it's going to be worse for you than it was for Tyre. Like he says this as like, this is an example of devastating, like final judgment for somebody, and you're facing the same thing. So it's like, it becomes almost an iconic image of when God brings judgment definitively on somebody.
Yeah, he says to them, it will be, if you don't repent, it will be worse for you than it was for Tyre.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Another thing I was reminded of when I'm looking at, like, it says embroidered work, fine linen, precious stones, gold, these jewels. God had requested that the nation of Israel use these types of materials to build the temple, build his temple. So it's not like, you know, we're trying to say that these things are bad. Like, God requested those things to be built with the temple to be built with those things because they are beautiful and there's craftsmanship involved in it. And he wanted the place where his presence was going to reside to look beautiful. And so it is a really cool thing to go back and read about how the Israelites were supposed to construct the temple with all these things. But I was reminded that it's not that they're bad things, but it's, are we putting all of our value into those things? Which is, I think, what this is kind of getting at. Like, this is just a little bit too much.
Yeah, and what's it surrounding? Like, what's it being used to highlight?
It's not the jewels. Yeah. It's your pride. Mm-hmm. It's not the gold. It's your pride. It's not your car. It's your pride. It's not your house. It's your pride. It's not your clothes. It's your pride.
Yeah. And at the same time, what we don't want to do by saying that is lose the edge of what's here. Because this is one of the things people misunderstand. People think the Bible says wealth is evil. And it doesn't say that. It never says that. But what it does say a lot and very loudly is wealth is dangerous. Because the idea that you would get wealthy and then not really deal with pride is basically bonkers in the Bible. Like,
basically bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, it's
another good podcast issue.
Basically bonkers. But here's the thing that happens with wealth is that what it does is it turns up the volume on whatever it is that would be sinful for you. It makes it easier for you to indulge in it. And so that's where the Bible says you have to be careful, because every one of us, if given greater ability to do something, is going to have some part of us that's going to do things that are wrong, that are going to pursue the wrong thing. And so it's not, hey, Tyre, you probably shouldn't have touched that stuff. It's, man, you really didn't pay attention to the fact that this supercharges your pride and whatever other sin is going on. So there's like an ambiguity to wealth where it's not evil, but it easily becomes the avenue for evil. It's dangerous in that respect.
That sound means it's time for your comma tip of the week. Who is the hero of every story you read in the Bible? Answer, God. It's all his story. That's why one of the things we look for when making observations is truths about God. There's always a good observation to be made. What does this passage tell me about God? Mark down what the passage tells you about what God is like, or what he has said, or what he has done. Ezekiel is a visually compelling book to read. Lots of images, visions, and word pictures. Don't let the fascination become a distraction from the main attraction. And this has been your comma tip of the week.
All right, before we move on to the message, I do want to jump off of that comma tip of the week. Because here's the truth in this. There's a lot of talk about a lot of people in here, and it's not a lot of God talk. So I do want to say, even in a passage like this, what truths about God do we get out of this?
I would say one of the things we learn about God is God doesn't like pride.
One of the truths that I got in this is that no one is off limits. A foreign nation that he essentially has jurisdiction over, right? Like he's going to bring them to ruin.
Yeah. I had kind of as you were talking about, like, God wanting these beautiful things to be in worship of him. Mm-hmm. There's something kind of implied here of like, God made a whole bunch of incredible stuff and God really wants that to be used to honor him. So there's like an implicit, like by the misuse, you actually see something true about God and what he intended for the world in that. So, yeah, that's a great question. Always ask what truths you see about God. All right, let's go on to the M's in comma, and let's talk first about meditation. So this is a challenging passage to meditate on because it's a list of a lot of details. So what we're going to do for this one is actually kind of take a step backwards and ask the question, if there was a poem written about you and your potential downfall, perhaps it would not be about wealth. Maybe that is a challenge for you. That might be a snare for you. But if a prophet was going to come and say, this is the way you're going to fall down like Tyre would, what would it be about? Take 45 seconds and prayerfully ask God that question. All right, let's talk about the other M in comma, which is message. What message did you get out of this?
So my message is coming off the fact that since we've been reading Ezekiel, we've been hearing a lot about God pronouncing judgment on Israel, and now we're hearing about him pronouncing judgment on this nation. And I kind of already alluded to it, but my message is that God is sovereign over all rulers and nations, not just Israel. No one is off limits for him.
I'm going to use a few other verses in the Bible for my message for this text. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Pride comes before destruction, haughty spirit before a fall.
So the message I got out of this is, if pursuing wealth is your life, it'll be the death of you. And I look at this and I see the way that imagery of like the ship being shipwrecked, it's both the source of wealth, but it's also the thing that kills them, is just really vivid. And so I almost want to say consumerism will shipwreck you, but it seemed a little bit too right there. But there's something like that could have been beautiful about all of this. And yet, because it was all about the money and all about the wealth and not something bigger, it killed them. It destroyed them. It became their downfall. All right, let's talk about the A in comma, which is application. What do we do in response to this?
So my message is God is sovereign over all rulers and nations, not just Israel. So no one's off limits for him. I thought about what we had talked about earlier. We mentioned war, pride. There's slavery, trafficking, essentially, right? So when we hear about, you know, or even when we see bad things happen in our world, we can trust that God's not wringing his hands over these things, right? Like, he's sovereign. He is the supreme ruler over all, and he's going to bring the world back to right when it's his time.
So my message is, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Pride comes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. And so what's rattling around in my head is, no matter what, there's going to be humility coming our way. Now, that day might be when we get to the other side and we see Jesus face to face and we finally recognize fully who he is in comparison to who we are. But life has a way of humbling you. Your mistakes have a way of humbling you. So there's like this a reactive humility that comes from painful things. Or you could have a proactive humility, which is in your prayer time and in your posture towards God, a proactive humility instead of one that is thrust upon you. And so my application is, man, be as proactive as you can with humility so that you don't have it thrust upon you.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. You got humility coming to you eventually. That's a really deep thought. Oh my gosh. All right, my application. So for my message, if pursuing wealth is your life, it'll be the death of you. My application is for different groups of people. So some of you are a little bit like Tyre. You're business people and you're good at making money. And that is a God-given thing. That's wonderful. But there is a temptation with that, that if you don't have a vision for your business that goes beyond the bottom line, then it will consume you and it will lead places you don't want to go. And maybe you never intended to go. And so if you're a Christ follower and you're someone who has a business, to actually do the hard work of saying, yeah, I know the way the world tells me, these are the things it's supposed to be all about. You might have to do really hard work to say, I'm going to bring in other things that nobody is telling me I have to care about. And I'm going to care about those. And it may shift the way I do business. Those of you who are parents, it's your job to train up your kids to think about money and possessions in a godly way. And some of us, we just go on autopilot. We just do what we're doing, but we've got to cast a vision to say, in your life, as you make money, here's what it's actually about. Like, this is what it's for. This is why you do it. This is the impact it can have if you do it in a godly way. And then just for ourselves, we live in a society, like I made the comment about lifestyle magazines and things like that. The reality is there's a whole lot of people who are, you know, scrolling through TikTok or whatever and seeing these things and saying, I want that kind of life. And it can be so easy for it to creep in your heart, even if you don't have all the stuff, to start saying, this is what it's about. This is where the good life is. And we've got to like resist that and say, no. Because if I make my life about that, it'll kill me.
Good stuff, guys. All right, friends, there you have it. Thanks for listening this week. Join us again next Monday for a new episode. We'll be looking at another passage from the Bible Savvy Reading Plan. In the meantime, if you're not following along with us, check out BibleSavvy.com and to start reading. Also, you can subscribe and leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Email us your questions or suggestions at podcast@BibleSavvy.com. Lastly, tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next week.